Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Nice to meet you from beautiful, historic Midtown Atlanta on Super Bowl Sunday. Metron people, would you give the podcast people a big welcome? And those of you in the podcast audience who message me and let me know this is really working for you, thank you. Your positive feedback means a lot. My title this month, start a new series, is The Liberated Heart, Freeing Yourself from the Past and Breaking the Addiction to Fear. Why? What are you laughing about? Oh, okay. And this is one of those things where there's been a lot of confirmation about this message. Let me go ahead and give you this scripture, and then I'll kind of tell you where I'm going with this. This is 1 John 4:18, that the King James says, "There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear." In the Message Bible, it says it this way. It says, "There is no room in love for fear. Well-formed love banishes fear, since fear is crippling, a fearful life, fear of death, fear of judgment, is one not yet fully formed in love." And I've taught along these lines for years, that the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is actually fear. Now, this is kind of, when I'm sort of thinking about something, my antenna's out, and there are certain words that have strong vibration for me, and I was already thinking along these lines, and then one day this week, I worked out, and Stephen was telling me about a book he's reading right now about synchronicity, and he had talked about how the book deals with dealing with ego, and that word really caught my attention because I've been thinking about that. And so I came home and I was reading some things, and it sort of brought me into teaching by this woman that I'm actually going to quote her a couple of times. So I wrote a meditation that night that was sort of a flow out of what I had been reading about that day. Now, before I'm going to show you what I wrote in the meditation, a part of it. And before I do, let me give you this disclaimer. You remember a few months ago when I taught about, I don't remember the title of the series, but it was about not only did we sign up for this life before we got here, we may have actually created it. Remember we talked about that? And I said, I got to tell you, I have ambivalence isn't the word. I'm not ambivalent about the message. There's a spirit on a word that's different from the letter of a word. Let me say it to you this way. The idea that we may have signed up for our life before we got here and may have possibly created it ourselves, I don't know that I believe it literally, intellectually. I like the energy that it makes me feel from just thinking about the prospect of it. Do you understand? Like, I'm not sure you actually picked out your parents and picked out, and then there's things you look at in your life that were really horrible that happened, and you think, please don't tell me I created that, dear God. You know, because I know some of y'all are going through some things like, no, don't you put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby. I did not create that. However, there's something about the idea that I knew whatever in my life was coming, and I may have actually agreed to it ahead of time, that is a very empowering idea. Does that make sense? It's like intellectually, I don't know that I can support it like in a legal sense. I like the way it makes me feel to think. It makes me feel less victimized by life. If I look at something and think, no, I can handle this because I saw it coming. I agreed to come here, so this thing cannot overwhelm me. That's the God that I believe in, the God who has empowered me to create my own life. I'm just telling you, I don't believe in the God that's playing this big chess game with us and that we have no control over. I don't like that God. I don't believe in that God. That is not my reality. If that's the God you believe in, I'm your wrong spiritual leader, because you should know that's not what I believe in. I believe God has empowered us to create. Let us make people in our image and let them have dominion. And that paradigm is a part of everything that I believe. So I was reading some of the things that this woman has written, because this is her basic thesis. her idea is that everything is created by love. And if love didn't create it, it's not real. So that if you feel fear about something, the fear is just an illusion. Now, that's a very abstract idea. But I like, there's a feeling, there's a vibration I get off of the concept of that that I really do like. I like the, and we've talked about this before, that fear, there's an acronym, F-E-A-R, it's false evidence appearing real. So this isn't totally virgin territory for me. But let me show you what I wrote about it, and we'll go from there. This is from my meditation one night, maybe Thursday night, I think. I said, there's a philosophy which embraces the concept that love is the only emotion and that fear is just an illusion. The idea is that when you have a fearful or anxious thought, you should say to yourself, love did not create this thought, and so it is not real. Now, again, I can't intellectualize that, but I find this very attractive. I like, it does something to me inwardly to think, I only accept things in my life that were created by love. Anything that was created by fear, it's not real to me. I can deal with fear better if I think it's an illusion. Do you understand? And that's not, I'm not saying denial. I'm not saying there's not things out there that you should legitimately, you know, be afraid of. But, well, you'll get it as we unpack this. It's an admittedly abstract proposition, but I'm suggesting that you open yourself up to it, at least for tonight. When you've tried everything else, you can always count on love to do the impossible. As the scriptures say, love never fails. It's also been said that whenever you're afraid, it's proof that you've turned your back on love and chosen to have faith in the ego. Now again, I found this to be a very attractive idea. Because if fear is connected to ego, it kind of makes you rethink, what am I afraid of and why am I afraid of it? Like if somebody betrays you or talks bad about you and you overreact to it, you have to ask yourself, why did this matter to me so much? And it really kind of becomes a teachable moment. We're all human enough to want everybody to like us, but I'm telling you, not everybody's going to like you all the time, and there are some people that you thought had your back that do not have your back. That is just a fact of life. And you if you don't get that, you're going to be victimized and beaten up by life. I mean, you nearly have to find that sort of sweet spot between not being cynical. Well, Jesus said, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Not being cynical, but also knowing that anything's possible with people. I mean, it's just true. The people that you think could never turn on you can and do. And that's not exclusive to you. That's been happening. I mean, Jesus even spoke to Judas, and even though Judas was fulfilling a purpose, on a personal level, Jesus said, if this hadn't been a friend of mine, I could have borne it. He said, it's the fact that we had actual affection for each other. That's what makes this so painful. And if anybody's ever been betrayed by a friend or, you know, someone that you loved at one time who now has a different paradigm of you, it's a difficult thing to go through. But you have to ask yourself, why am I so afraid that not everybody's going to think I'm wonderful? And that really gets down to the question about ego. So it really, the fear becomes a way for you to become introspective about why does it matter so much? It's too simple to say, well, I'm human, everybody wants to be liked. Because it's more complex than that. But I think that this woman's on to something when she says this. And again, I can't intellectualize this, but I like this idea. Again, it's proof that you've turned your back on love and chosen to have faith in the ego. Again, the concept is out of the box, but definitely worth consideration. Paul said, and yet I show you a more excellent way as a lead into his classic love chapter. Love is always the more excellent way. As I often say, don't overthink it, but try this as a spiritual experiment. Whatever is going on in your head this evening, tell yourself, if love did not create it, it's not real. Now, I'm telling you, I was going through something this week that this personally worked for me on a very visceral, emotional level. Because there's some things, the more you think about them, the worse the situation. It's like, it's like chewing something that you can't swallow, and the more you chew it, the bigger it gets in your mouth, and you're like, this is, I got to spit this out. And that's why you keep thinking about it. And the idea of thinking about it from the paradigm of love gave me an asymmetrical way to deal with it and to even deal with my own ego. I don't think ego is altogether a negative thing. I think if you didn't have some ego, you wouldn't have gotten out of bed and brushed your teeth this morning. I mean, there's a certain amount of, like people say, you know, some of the things people have said to me over the years about, you think too highly of yourself or whatever. I think you have no idea. If you don't feel pretty good about yourself doing what I do, you would never survive it. It's okay. It's just a light. Will wanted y'all to know he just got here. It's all good. Just a little mood lighting. I loved it. As I'm talking about fear, I loved your reaction. That was a nice gasp from the audience. I was like, y'all, it's just a light. Settle there. What'd you say, Shadi? Chandra said, loved it, dude. Chandra, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard. Oh, Lord. She said, loved it. Look, loved it and do it. So, all I'm suggesting to you is if there's something you're working through in your personal feelings, just give this concept a chance. And I've gone on to read a few more things that she has said, and I think she's really on to some things. And look, there's, what commercial did I see last night? I don't even remember what. I don't think it's a Super Bowl commercial, but it was kind of a send up of New Age psychobabble, and so it was funny. And I wish I shouldn't have even brought it up if I couldn't remember, but I'm willing to not take some of the things we say so seriously that I think they can't be, you know. Like, there's some things that people say that the universe did. I'm like, I don't think that was the universe. I just think that's just life. You may be over-spiritualizing everything. However, fear is something that we do have to deal with. Let me show you this. There's more. I said more. Wait, I forgot. If nothing else, you'll have a whole new perspective on your situation, and new solutions may suddenly occur to you once you're no longer trapped in the fear-anxiety loop. And I think that's an important concept. It's like, if my ego is challenged, it causes me to go into fear, which makes me respond in ways that are not loving. And so it keeps this negative cycle of a downward spiral. Paul said it this way. He said, the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God in the pulling down of strongholds. I don't believe in demons in the conventional sense anymore, but I do think there is negative energy that people pull you into, that when you get pulled into that vortex, you pay a price for it. There's some arguments I want to avoid, not because I can't win the argument, but it's because I don't like where this is going to take me. I'm going to have to stoop so low for me to have this conversation. And I even, it wasn't an original thought, it was somebody's meme I shared yesterday. It was about not going low vibrational. I said, I've learned my lessons from that. You come up, rise up and meet me. And I could tell you Bible story after Bible story that would support that. Not the least of which is, you remember Nehemiah's building the wall, and everybody's like lying about him and saying all kinds of stuff about him. And he said, I can't come to... At one point, he had a brick in one hand and a sword in the other. He was having to fight off really the fake news about him. But his word was, I'm doing a good work. I can't come down from this wall. And that's a great concept, that you're so proactive. Like, I'm too busy building a better reality for me to get pulled into this negative reality. And most of that negative reality if you can nearly always connect the dots back to fear and ego. I think I have another quote by her. Her name is Gabrielle Bernstein. She's written some books, but I just picked out several things she said that I like. This one is this one's very important. She says, we sense love, but we don't believe in it. We save our faith for fear. But ultimately, there is a quiet voice in each of us that longs for something better. Something about that really rings true. Why is it difficult to believe when somebody says, I love you, that they're not really telling the truth? You know why? Because you've had other people tell you that didn't act loving. So you're in the fear anxiety loop. It's like, well, now I've heard this before, and I know you don't really mean it. But her point is why is it so much easier to believe in fear and not believe in love? Which that is a very interesting proposition. Like, yeah, why is that? Why is it that you have a tendency to believe the worst about yourself? This friend of ours that we were talking about yesterday, he's actually going through the whole school for life coaching, and he was sort of telling me some of the things that he's going through in these classes. And I said, it's interesting hearing you talk about it, because everything you're saying are things that I teach on, but I like the way that your concept has sort of organized it into language that can really help people in a tangible way where they can bring change to their life. The whole thing about life coaching is you don't really give anybody advice. You facilitate them to work out their own situation, and you as a life coach, you're non-judgmental, which is one reason why it's hard to find. Life coaching is very different from typical counseling or pastoring, because the Christian idea is fivefold ministry is to tell you what to do. Life coaching is a different thing. It's like, well, no, the answer is in you and whatever. But he said, you know, it's causing me, he said, as I'm going through this training, it's making me have to deal with a lot of my own unresolved issues, not the least of which is my own personal fear of rejection. I don't think you would mind me saying this. You probably know what I'm talking about. And he said, because of some of my history of rejection, you know, it's easy to get into that loop, and it's making me deal with why am I so afraid of that? And I said, well, I can tell you this, in 47 years of ministry, which a heck of a lot of counseling in all that time, if I had to come up with one thing that kept people from receiving more than anything else, would be a sense of unworthiness. More than anything else. People say, well, so-and-so didn't happen for so-and-so because they had sin in their life. I'm telling you, that, believe me, I know all kind of fabulously successful people that have horrible morals. Sin has very little to do with it. It's how you perceive. Like, I used to have people say to me, you know, not you guys, but back in the day, I would hear people say, when you talk about positive stuff or believing yourself or even talking about me being the righteousness of God in Christ, I don't disagree with you. I just don't think it applies to me. Like, when you're preaching, I think, well, this is for everybody. This is for all the good people. All of these people are righteous, but if they knew about me, they'd know this is not applicable to me. What people don't realize is that nearly everybody has thought that on some level. And so that's kind of where I want to go with this. This is going to be a little bit different teaching on fear than I've done before. And we're going to open some new neuropaths and cause you to look at it a little bit differently, because I'm looking at it a little bit differently. You can have a very healthy self-esteem and still disconnect yourself from ego. They're different things. When you love yourself, that's healthy. When you're ego-driven, you're setting yourself up for failure. You are. All right. This is interesting what Chopra said. I quoted him last week, but I'm going to quote him again. He says, when you evoke fear, you set into motion the physiology of stress that accelerates biological aging. You must let go of this fear in order to reverse aging. Now, If nothing else, I say I'll get your attention. This will. When I tell you fear is making you old, you'll be like, tell me more. Wait, I don't think I finished. Go back, Michelle. You must let go of this fear in order to reverse aging. Okay, go ahead. When we think fearful thoughts, we cause our bodies to go into stress. Our heart rate increases, we release adrenaline into our bloodstream, and we even change the flow of our blood. I don't want to get in the weeds on this, but I was going to post something the other day about stress, and I was looking at some of these. They'll show like a picture of the human body, and they show all the negative places that stress affects it. And stress is generally worse for you than smoking cigarettes. It's nearly the worst thing you can do for your body. Obviously, we know what it does for you emotionally, but it actually manifests in your body as, I mean, I couldn't believe, as I was reading, I thought, wow, it affects that. I mean, stress affects your eyesight. It affects your joints. It affects brain function. I mean, it goes deeply into your cellular structure. It's something that, I'll just tell you this, I believe in these meditation weekends more than I ever have. Not that that's a panacea for everything, but at least, here's the good thing about going away to do something like that, even more than when we just do it here in the theater. It's because you are saying to yourself, I am worth taking some time off, spending a little extra money, going somewhere to do this for myself. When you say, well, I've just got too much to take care of, that all the more reason why you figure out a way to get somebody to take care of your stuff and say, I've got to take a few hours for myself. Because I don't care how noble you are, you cannot live in stress all the time and it not negatively affect you. Anyway, imagine doing this on a regular basis, day after day, for your whole life. Fear causes us to exhaust ourselves. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation like this where something was going on, maybe you didn't feel safe in your house or something and you were afraid, and then at a certain point you're so exhausted, you're like, you know, if the bad guy's in the closet, he's just going to have to... Was it Raza who said at that time, it's one of the funniest things ever. I think it was Raza. It was one night when we were at Virginia Highland Church, and I used to walk... It's not a dangerous neighborhood, but I used to walk all the ladies to their cars. And there was one night we had done something, we were cleaning up, and it was Raza and somebody else. And whoever it was so funny because I said, let me walk you out to your car. And they said, Bishop, she said, as bad as my feet hurt tonight, I wish somebody would come up and try to start something with me. And I was like, I felt it. I was like, scared of you? Like, I think y'all got this. But I knew exactly what she meant. It's kind of the same. I mean, I've heard different versions of the Rosa Parks story, but the one that resonates with me the most is people say, why did you... I think I was talking about you, Rosalind, before you came in. Was that you? I'm giving you credit for that quote. But people would ask Ms. Parks, in, you know, like, where did you get the courage to not give up your seat to a white man? She said, I was tired. She said, I'd been working all day and I was tired. And I know what she means by that. Big picture, she was tired of being treated like a second-class citizen. But in the immediate, it was like, no, I'm tired. And if you tell me to get up, I'm not scared of you. My fatigue is stronger than my fear of you. And I understand what she means by that. Sometimes in your life, things don't change until you just get sick and tired of being sick and tired. I mean, people can counsel with you and talk to you, but there comes a day when you say, I'm not putting up with this anymore. And I'm tired of it. And until you reach that point, nothing significantly changes for you because... You know, the quote is never complain about what you permit. And of course, I cannot quote this line, but I didn't even see Snakes on a Plane. But the famous line is, I am tired of these blankety-blank snakes on this plane. And I think y'all know what I mean. But the point of it is, like, I'm not putting up with this anymore. It's like, that's when the protagonist of the story has a paradigm shift. Like, I've been tolerating. It kind of becomes a metaphor for your life. You know, at a certain point, you're like, I'm not flying this plane with snakes on it anymore. Something's either I'm leaving this plane or the snakes are, or the plane's going down, or something. Something's going to change, like, now. And that's that's beyond fear. All right, I think I have another quote by her, Gabrielle Bernstein. She says, but giving up... Now, y'all just open your hearts. I didn't even tell you about this one, as per our conversation this morning. But giving up fear is like giving up sugar. They're both sneaky ingredients that hide out in almost everything. And that is the truth. Have you ever tried to give up sugar? Yeah, it's like sugar is omnipresent. How do you live without it? It's in everything. Just when you think, well, I'm eating vegetables, you can taste, oh, they put sugar in these carrots. I mean, it's like there is no way to live sugar-free completely unless you just plant a garden and eat your own stuff. But I think this is an interesting analogy because I understand what she means by this. But giving up fear is like giving up sugar. They're both sneaky ingredients that hide out in almost everything. And just when you think you've got that craving under control, suddenly it rears its not-so-pretty head again. And it's true. I know what it's like to be off of sugar enough to I don't even think about it. And, like, I'm off it. And then you eat it again, and that switch is flipped back on, and it sends those neurotransmitters to your brain. And before you know it, you're like, it's, again, I don't see this as literal, but Jesus said when the demon goes out of a man, it roams in dry places, and then it comes back and brings seven worse with it. And that's why addiction sometimes is so bad. When you go back into what you came out of, you go back in even deeper. But I think this is an interesting connection that she makes. She says, sugar's in everything. Well, fear's in everything. Last night I was thinking about it because it took us a while to get home. I mean, I live three blocks from Mercedes-Benz, so you can imagine. Which, you know, it was like gridlock around my building, and I'm fine with that. I like being in the middle of everything. Super Bowl isn't every week, so I know, well, once we get home today, we won't be leaving the house again because, you know, we're just not going to be able to. And it's fine. I'm willing to put up with that. I heard people being interviewed saying, I don't like all this traffic Super Bowl is going to bring. I'm like, God, how small is your vision? It's not like the Super Bowl is every week. I mean, it's bringing all this publicity to the city and all this money in the city that's going to have a trickle-down effect for you. You don't have to be in the middle of it, but why have you got to... I remember back during the Olympics, so many people going, I don't like you. Roads are going to be shut down. I'm like, it's the freaking Olympics. Like, why aren't you happy? This is an amazing... The Centennial Olympics are going to be in Atlanta, and all you can think about is, well, it's going to take me longer to get to work. Like, this is what's wrong with your life. Do you know what I mean? Because there's some things, based in fear. Exactly. And that's my point. Like, I'm looking at, I mean, it was crazy around my building last night. I posted a video out my window, and I probably shouldn't have because I think it affected the crowd this morning. Because when I showed everybody what the traffic's like, people were like, I ain't getting in that. Well, that was last night. It's not this morning, but live and learn. But the point is, people say, well, are you afraid to live in the city? No, because there's stuff that happens everywhere. Everywhere. Where crime has even gotten out. Ken works like in an idyllic private community, and crime's even gotten in there. Like, there's no way to, which, by the way, he's Employee of the Month this month, so congratulations again. And this time they listed him as HVAC engineer because he went to the tech. So I better recognize. But there's no, like, I remember, Joan, I remember your mom took you and Judah up to the top of the World Trade Center, like, just weeks before 9/11. And you would have never thought that, you know, like 3 weeks from now, this building's not going to be. You certainly would have never thought we're in a dangerous place. Technically, the only safe place is the secret place of the Most High, because stuff could happen. Anyway, I remember years ago, I was watching the news one night, and this guy in Florida, his house just fell in a sinkhole. Like, with no warning, house is here. And I remember looking at that, I thought, there's no way you could prepare for that. You could have storm windows. You could have the finest alarm system. You could do termite pest control. You could re-roof. You could have the state of the art, everything. Your house falls in the ground. There's no. And so this is kind of the way I look at the whole, typically the way I've looked at the fear piece. When I get in the car, I buckle my seatbelt, and it's an acknowledgement that people have car accidents, but I still drive the car. I can't not drive. I get in the car and I go, click. I'm acknowledging that is in the realm of possibility. I do not expect it to be. I'm going to do everything in my power for it not to be my reality, but it does happen. When I lay down tonight, I will put the deadbolt on my front door. I'm not going to stand there all night and be afraid there's going to be a home invasion. I'm acknowledging, yeah, there might be somebody out there that I don't want to come into my house tonight, but I am going to go lay down and go to sleep. So it's an acknowledgement of living in the real world, but still living your life. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but did you know people get divorced? Did y'all know that? But people still get married. Like, people could say, well, I ain't getting married because 50% of all marriages end in divorce. Well, you might be the 50% that doesn't end that way. How do you know? You just have to do it. I mean, I can counsel with you, and I'm doing some counseling now, but basically you got to figure it out. You know, you can counsel for 5 years and still there'd be something like, well, I didn't know that. I didn't see that one coming. Like, well, that's just called life. there's no way you can totally be prepared for everything, no matter how much you do your prep work. There's still things that, for lack of a better term, blindside you. They just do. And that's why you can't live in fear. You can't live in the, well, what if such and such happens? Well, let's hope this doesn't happen. Like I tell you, I choose to live without guns. That's my choice. I don't tell you not to do that. When somebody says, well, what would you do if somebody broke into your house? Well, I'm hoping that doesn't happen, and that's a chance I'm willing to take. I'm not telling you not to do it. I'm just saying, for me, when Jesus said, they that live by the sword die by the sword, the way I see it, when I get a gun, I'm inviting reasons to have a gun. That's my reality. I'm not anti-Second Amendment. I'm not telling you that should be your reality. I'm just saying, for my near 61 years, that has worked for me. And I have lived in dangerous neighborhoods, and I've been in dicey situations and in third world countries. And, you know, I've even, one time in the Philippines, even was fired on. We were going through a checkpoint thing, and we didn't slow down enough, and guys were shooting rifles at the car. And as they pulled us over, I'm thinking, oh, this could be a really great book. Yeah. As they're coming over, I was like, recently I was in a trip to the Philippines. That's where my mind went to. I was like, oh, here's a story. I never think about, it's not naivete. I know bad things happen to people. I just feel a very strong circle drawn around me that I don't see anybody crossing. That's just my reality. However, as she says here, fear sometimes comes up in subtle ways. It's not the, obviously, if you're out in the woods and you come across a rattlesnake and you say, oh, I wasn't afraid at all, something's wrong with you. You should be afraid of that. That's just caution. Or, you know, if a if you knock a candle over in your house, you should be concerned that that could start a fire. I'm not. Yes. Jackie says if something falls over as it did earlier, she's going to duck, and she has good reason to. It's not very far from here. One day something heavy fell on her face. And that's a whole other story. She lived to tell it, but yes. Exactly. And you still show up here. You could say, I'm not driving back on that property. Large things fall on the bridge of your nose and fracture your nose when you go there. That's not your not your reality. I have another scripture to show you. This is 2 Timothy 1:7. This is out of the Amplified Classic. He says, "For God did not give us a spirit of timidity, of cowardice, of craven and cringing and fawning fear, but he has given us a spirit of power and of love and of calm and well-balanced mind and discipline and self-control." I will tell you this, and this is the reason I want to treat fear as an addiction this month. The less you partake of it, the less you want it. Because I'm telling you, people don't even realize how addicted they are to their fear. They're addicted to the feelings of fear that they have because they feel familiar. And when you live out of fear, you nearly have to create a new persona. Because your fear is so totally connected to your comfort zone. I know there's things in my life that I've done that was beyond my comfort zone. And as I was doing it, I was thinking, I remember thinking, I can't believe I'm doing this. Because I've definitely gone against my fear to do this. And you can nearly feel new neuropaths opening up in your brain. It's like, wow, there's a part of my brain that is open to a possibility of living life beyond fear. And that's, if you learn how to age proactively, things actually will get better for you as you get older. Because you remember that Peggy Lee song, "Is That All There Is?" Remember she says, when she was a little girl, she saw her house burn down. And she said there, and her dad held her in his arms. She said, "Is that all there is to a fire?" And then she talks about a guy broke her heart. And she said, there's a line where she says, "He left me." She said, "I thought I would die, but I didn't." And I said, "Is that all there is to a..." And that's what you're supposed to pick up along your journey. It's like, oh, that's what a divorce is like. Oh, that's what it's like when, that's what betrayal is like. Oh, that's what, you know, like, there are certain things I've been through in my life that nearly was like a mental checklist. It's like, oh, I see what that's what that is. Okay. This is how you overcome that. But when you're new to life experiences, everything that comes along, you think, this is going to be the end of the world. Have you seen, there's another commercial. I never can remember what they're advertising. But it's a commercial that shows how different you are with your first child and your third child. And the first child, they're changing the baby's diaper, and the wife's like, "You're doing it wrong. You're gonna..." They're like yelling at each other. The third one, the dad's in the shower, and she like hands the baby, like, "Wash him." You know, like and those of us that have had many children know, early on you think, "Oh, they're gonna die from that," and then later you're like, "Nah, they're fine." I remember one time, when Rutherford was still in his other life in Waco, they had 10 children, and I don't think any of those kids, I know they never had insurance, and I don't know if the kids were ever vaccinated. I mean, they lived off the grid. And some of the things he would tell me about the things they've survived, I said, "Didn't that scare you?" He said, "Nah, after you've had 10 kids, it's like, you've seen it all, you know. You're not sure they're all there in the house anyway, so it's not like... You know, you could lose a couple, and you're like, I don't know, when's the last head count? And I understood his point. It's like, at a certain point, you just can't be that afraid for all of them. You're like, y'all got to figure it out. There's a lot of y'all. And but that's going back to the idea of really sort of getting past the ego. Because, and I've taught this for years, you know, believe for the best, prepare for the worst. Like, sometimes you have to nearly go to the dark side and say, all right, well, what if that did happen? Let me not create this with my vision, but let me think about, well, what would happen if that occurred? Okay, well, that's what that would look like. All right, I've looked at it. And it nearly takes the sting of it away to say, oh, that's what that would I'm not afraid to look at that, and now I'm moving on past it. I have one more quote from her. No, this is actually from Marianne Williamson, who, by the way, I think is running for president. I'm like, oh, Marianne, don't stay in your lane. I think it's, I'm not sure it's for real. I think it's a, I'm not sure what she's doing on this one, but of course, right now, I think everybody, several of you are running for president, apparently. I'm like, okay, let's see what happens. But her concept, tell me what you stand for. What's your platform? Love is what we are born with. Fear is what we learn. The spiritual journey is the unlearning of fear and the acceptance of love back into our hearts. Well, you know, that's certainly true. I remember we used to, when I worked with my dad over here, we had an Abeka school. We had K through 12. And in the K-4, I remember there was, the teacher was telling me one day that she had walked out of the room and the kid said, Miss So-and-so, somebody came to the room looking for you. And she said, well, who was it? And they didn't know the name. And so she was trying to get a description. She said, was he black or white? And these four-year-olds just stared at her blankly like, what are you talking? Like, they didn't have that concept. She says, well, was he the color of his skin dark or light? They're like, it's just, the more she tried to explain it, she said, the more absurd it sounded. Because they're looking at her like, what do you mean, was he? You know, I used to have somebody that went to the church. I remember her telling me that they're African-American, and her daughter was out playing with some white kids when she was a little girl. And she had never heard even the term black, much less any negative stereotype or anything. And so one of the kids said to her, you're black. And she says, no, I'm not. And she goes into her mother. She says, Mom, that white boy across the street said, we're black. We're not black, are we? She said, well, yeah. Like, she's trying to explain it to her. And like she said, it was just such a paradigm shift. She said, I had no idea. Like, what? Because, you know, she's thinking, that's black. We're not that. But it's interesting, the things that you realize about yourself, you don't know that that it's different or other or whatever until somebody says, like, I remember, for other reasons, I remember along my journey, people would say things to me that I was like, oh, wow, I think I'm different. Like some of the things that some boys my age would be talking about that I couldn't relate to at all. And the way they're talking about it, I'm like, yeah, right, yeah. One of these things is not like the other. And you don't realize you're different because you see the world as you are. So you just think, well, that's the way the world is. And then when you're peer group, you realize, I don't think I have the same worldview as you. This is very interesting. And then you start realizing, oh, the way you see the world is not right. And then, you know, when somebody adds God and the Bible into the mix and, you know, things that, oh, the way that you see the world that just was totally organic and the way you always thought, you never chose to think that way. That's just the way you always thought. And then somebody says, by the way, you know that way that you've always thought? Well, God says you're going to hell for it. You're like, wow, this really seems unfair. the odds are really stacked against me. And you learn, people learn their different ways to manage or whatever. But I love this idea that everybody's born with love. You know, if you hate somebody, you were like the song from South Pacific, you have to be carefully taught. I love some of those ads where you see babies of different ethnicities playing together and they have no sense of differentness. They don't even have sense of differentness with gender. They're like, you know, they just love each other and play with each other. And there's these little nuanced things. I remember Jimmy Carter was in his, I think it was his autobiography, he was saying in the community of Plains where he was raised, he was the only white kid of his peer group. Like, he grew up out in the country, and all of the little boys he played with were all black. And he said, I remember a day where we were walking somewhere, and I walked through a gate, and they stood back and let me walk first. And he said, I could tell they had already been conditioned to don't rock the boat, whatever. And he said, it was just such a moment of, we had never felt different before, and suddenly I was aware that they had been taught to defer to me. It was subtle, but that's why I just want to say, don't get mad when I say this, but when people like Roger Stone are calling what they're going through a lynching, I'm like, let me show you, unless you're Leo Frank, the only white man in America to be, don't say lynching. Let me show you what a lynching actually was. We're living in a world where people use hyperbole way too much. You know, people call somebody a narcissist. People throw that word around. No, if you've ever actually read, a narcissist is like a psychopath, a sociopath. Just because somebody's got a healthy self-esteem or even a large ego doesn't make him a narcissist. And what happens is when you throw those words around, you desensitize people to the actual, yes. So, no, Roger Stone may be going through a lot, but he's not going through a lynching. That lynching was a whole other thing that I'm not sure white people even have a right to use that word. Like, with white people, they're like, no, this is not applicable to your ancestral experience. That's really not one of your words. Sorry, that was your free part. I just put that in there, a little consciousness raising, free of charge. But when you start examining the fears that you picked up and how, when you unlearn them, like I've thought when I see the things that are happening with my dad right now, I think a lot about things that my cousin talked about when my aunt went through Alzheimer's or dementia or whatever. And she had always been super claustrophobic, I mean, to the point she couldn't even get on an elevator. And she said, after a certain point, I'd put her on the elevator and she didn't remember she was afraid. She said it was the craziest thing, like walking an elevator. And mom's just like, yeah, no problem. And it just shows you that none of your fears are organic. They're all things that you learned through life experience. Somebody taught you to fear something. And if you don't challenge them, you just start collecting, you know, fear upon fear upon fear upon fear, and don't even realize you're addicted to several drugs. You know, you're not just doing coke. You're shooting heroin and doing ecstasy, and there, you know, it's all fear. I know that's a bizarre analogy, but you get my point. So that's what we're going to examine this month, about there's no fear in love, and just for the month, just try this as an experiment. Examine negative thoughts and ask yourself, is this real or not? Did love birth this? Because if fear birthed it, it may not be real, and it's certainly not going to be part of my reality. Just try it. Again, don't try to intellectualize it, because it's not going to make sense to you if you intellectualize it. But I'm even going to challenge you to not be so protective over your ego either. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's actually very, very liberating to, you know, when somebody came to Jesus and said, Master, you're good. And he says, why do you call me good? There's none good but God. And a lot of theologians have debated about why he said that. I just think it's interesting that Jesus could, in one sense, be so completely self-confident, and in the other sense, nearly self-deprecating. Like he believed in his gift, but also, what did Paul say in the Philippians? Though he's in the equal with God, did not think it robbery, but made himself of no reputation, took on the form of a servant. I mean, even for Jesus to put a towel around his waist and wash his disciples' feet was a very symbolic gesture of him, because in their world, that was totally reserved for a certain class of people. The servant class were the ones that did that sort of thing. So for Jesus to wash their feet. Remember, even Peter said, well, don't, Peter's own pride wouldn't let him do it. Peter said, well, don't just wash my feet. You know, like, wash my head, wash my hands. He was like, he got proud about it. And Jesus said, if I don't do this, you don't have any part of me. So, you can find the balance of believing in yourself and not being a jerk about it. And once in a while, if somebody calls you on something, they may be right. Two or three times lately, I've got a couple people that kind of stay passive aggressive with me on Facebook, and I'm like, oh Lord, you know, this is your journey. I hope you figure it out. I'm not having a war with you. This is your, God bless you. But there's other people that sometimes, you know, you ever had somebody post something and you think, aren't they meaning that for me? And sometimes I'll look at it and think, well, if they are meaning it for me, then touche, you know, actually a valid point. That's when you know I'm not living in the fear anxiety loop. I can look at that and say, well, maybe they did. Maybe that's just their reality. But I don't even have to, I don't even need to message them and say, what exactly did you mean by that? I'm like, maybe they did mean that. Not the end of the world. Guess what? People could say all kinds of stuff about you. It won't kill you. If it killed you, I'd have been 6 feet under a long time ago. Jesus said, beware when all men speak well of you. I've never had to beware. and it's a great place to live. You say, well, you know what? I can't go around defending myself all the time. Either people know me or they don't. I remember, this is an extreme statement, but I knew what he meant by this. Kenneth Hagin used to say, he said, I wouldn't defend myself if somebody accused me of killing my grandmother. That's a very strong statement. I think if somebody accused me of killing my grandmother, I probably would speak up. But his point was, either people know that that couldn't possibly be true for me, or they don't. And there's no way I can do damage control. If they think that's a possibility, then they never knew me anyway. It's an interesting idea. I think people are going to think what they're going to think, and guess what? It's not the end of the world. And then when people do think well of you, that's awesome. It's a beautiful thing. I read what you wrote this morning, and it's very gratifying to hear that you've blessed people and whatever. I never get tired of that. But it's also balanced with, I have close to 2,000 people blocked on Facebook who probably don't hold your opinion. And it's okay. I was actually going to unblock them. Charles called me on it. Charles said, have you lost your mind? And I think we'll end it there. Let's all stand. So who's winning tonight? Anybody want to prophesy? Rams? This is a Rams crowd? How many Aries do we have in here? Aries, the sign of the Ram. Weren't Patriots the one that had the deflate gate a few years ago? Shadow, I like you in the second row. I get more bang for the buck when you're in second row. I get more. I like what you're giving me. Just remain standing, and then I'll speak a blessing over. Did you get anything out of this today? You think this is worthwhile? All right.
Contributing to Metron is quick and easy. You can give anytime using any smartphone. Text the amount you'd like to donate to 404-620-5044.
Yeah, they want you to up the 35.
You will then receive a notification that you successfully completed your donation. You may also visit missionthenow.com and click the support tab to give there as well. When you contribute to Metron, you're also donating to the charity or organization of the month. Thank you for your investment into Metron.
If you're making a check, make it to JESM and Danny will receive that. If you have cash, pay it forward. If you want to bless Jonah for being here with us today, you can certainly do that as well. I just call us all into a great awareness this month of what we need to keep and what we need to let go. And I speak over you that you are motivated by love and not motivated by fear, and that there is no fear in love. Perfect love casts out fear. And that as we examine this in depth in the coming weeks, that you're able to let your defenses down and receive a word that is actually going to change the direction of your life, that love never fails, and that God has not given you a spirit of fear, but a power and of love and of a sound mind. I love you so much. Enjoy your Super Bowl night. And you wake up tomorrow saying, this is the day the Lord has enabled me to make. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Peace.